A podcast of the cinema.
Who are you, anyway?
I am Alonso Duralde. I'm the film reviews editor at The Wrap. I'm co-host of the podcast, in addition to this one, Who Shot Ya? Over at Maximum Fun, and Breakfast All Day with my former What the Flick cohorts, Christy Lemire, Matt Atchity, and Ben Mankiewicz. And you, sir?
My name is not Susan.
It's not right, but it's okay.
Dave White. I too am a film critic. I write for The Wrap. Mostly about art house stuff.
Mm.
There are times when you throw you, my editor, you are my editor at The Wrap.
Yes.
Not because of nepotism, by the way. I just want everyone to know this. I've been writing for The Wrap for what, like 6, 7 years
for
now?
Ages, yes.
And it all came about one time because someone bailed on you at the last second to go see a horror movie.
Yes.
I can't remember now which one it was.
Something about a door.
Maybe. The Spooky Door.
Yeah, The Spooky Door. That one. That horror classic.
Don't open Spooky Door.
Look, the same guy.
Anyway, you said to me, I need you to help me. I was like, nope. and you're like, no, seriously, someone has to go review this movie, like in an hour.
Right now,
like in an hour, can you please just do this? And I was like, you talk to Lady Boss, Sharon, and you tell her what you are planning to do, and you find out if it's okay. You did.
Look, we both
and
are.
She said, yeah, who cares?
For the Spooky Door, sure, whatever.
Spooky Door needed me. And so I wrote the review of Spooky Door, and then it was real haphazard for a while. Like, I would just fill in when you needed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think one day I said, you know what? I'm tired of filling in for like crappy movies that people are bailing on because they never wanted to do the review in the first place. I'll be taking something from the art house category, please. You can send me to something, aesthetically correct.
Well, you know, and you are very good at that, and so I'm happy to do it.
Well, it makes me happy to write about those films. I feel like a cheerleader.
Sure. Look, ultimately, you and I, you got hired at movies.com by the same person who hired me at The Wrap.
That's true.
So really.
Forgot about that part. You did. Yeah. So anyway, I'm a film critic. I write for The Wrap. Also, I tend to the needs of Alonzo Duralde.
And our Patreon subscribers.
Right. Yes. Also, all of you. You beautiful, beautiful people.
Listeners like you.
And I need to know that if you ever get fired from all of your jobs at the same time.
Uh-huh. Don't laugh. It's happened before.
Will you? It did happen before. Not because you did anything wrong.
No.
But because of the economy.
Yes.
Everybody got laid off all at the same time. Like, there was that moment, 2008 to 2011, where all the journalists were like, I guess we don't do this for a living anymore.
Suddenly all the trapdoors started opening.
Yeah. I guess we all are going to go work in other places and do different things and not write about stuff ever again. That happened, yeah, to you. Where was I going with this?
I don't know.
Why would you? Oh, yes. Should you get fired from all your jobs at once?
Yes.
I need to know that I am safe in your employment as Beyonce's assistant.
Well, how is your entrance exam
Did
going?
You take the test?
I did, as before we got started.
What did you get? What did you get right? Did you give her the right breakfast?
I gave her the right breakfast. I Skyped.
This is a Twitter game that you can play. Go find it on Twitter.
Yes.
It's can you be Beyonce's assistant?
And not get fired.
And not get fired. And it's a choose your own adventure.
Yes.
Twitter thread. Whoever came up with it spent a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the and if you click on the wrong answer to questions, you are immediately fired.
Yes.
And so
I picked the right breakfast. I picked the right daughter for her to Skype with.
You didn't give
with.
Her the hearty meal. You gave her the granola.
And strawberries.
And strawberries. Yes. Yes.
I Skyped.
That, me too.
I Skyped her with Blue
Ivy. I know
Ivy.
About red carpet days. You don't need a damn thing.
Oh, new.
No.
I Skyped her with Blue Ivy.
Mm-hmm.
I suggested painting to pass the time.
Now see, this is where we went off on different paths.
Uh-huh.
You sent her to go painting as her hobby.
Right.
Right. And what happened after that?
That was fine. But then she said, I want to hear a song.
Does she paint things?
She does. There's a picture of her, and it says she paints.
Oh.
But then it says...
I didn't know about this.
But then you have to pick a song off Lemonade to play for her. And I picked the wrong one, and she started crying at 3 minutes in, and I got fired.
You know there's not a damn song on Lemonade that makes her cry. Maybe when she wrote them.
Maybe.
Yeah. Now, see, I sent her to go swimming.
On a red carpet day. When hair and makeup is on their way over.
Well, this was because hair and makeup was running late.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, well, she got an hour. She could swim.
Yeah, but then she's got a shower to get the chlorine off.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Yeah,
see,
that's not practical.
I
thought the painting was going to be, you know.
After the swim, which was the right answer, it said, okay, now she needs to hurry up and get the hair and makeup for the red carpet. What do you do? Do you tell her to just dry off? Or do you send her, did you say, Beyonce, you go take a shower?
What did you pick?
I said that she would want the pool chlorine off of her.
Yes.
Or the oceany salt water off of her.
Correct.
She would want to go shower. She would want this.
That seems to make sense.
But it was a trick question.
Oh.
Because if you sent her swimming, no matter what you did, no matter what you answered next, you were wrong.
Because you were going to mess up the whole
thing. Because it was going to mess up everything. The chlorine, they said the chlorine from the pool was going to screw up everything on the makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And that the shower would make her hair wet and make her late. And she is not late to things. And so...
So you got fired earlier than I did.
Yes.
But we both got fired.
Although, I think that's unfair because I love her more than you do.
Yes. Unquestionably.
I have loved her for longer than you, and I love her with more emotional intensity than you.
I like her.
That's not enough. You must love her.
I don't love her.
You must love Beyonce, or you are wrong and problematic.
Sorry.
You can't merely like her. You must love her.
I like her, Dave.
It's the rule.
Like.
It's the rule of Beyonce. You cannot merely like. You must love.
And that's why
I don't... Even if you love, sometimes you're going to be fired.
That is why I don't love. Because there is this implication that you can't be just like...
A run-of-the-mill Beyonce fan.
Yeah.
Like, she's nice.
You can't dabble in Beyonce. You have to commit. And I don't feel like committing. It's like the original Star Trek.
Right. Beyonce is Star Trek.
Yes.
Yes.
You can't just dabble. You have to go whole hog. And I don't want to. So I just skip it all.
You don't skip it all.
I don't know.
Because you join me on my endeavors.
I go to the Star Trek movies.
On my Beyonce.
Like that enjoyment. Single ladies song.
Oh, God. Oh, you guys. I just remembered we're on a podcast right now.
Yes, we are.
I have to tell people.
I love that you forget that.
I have to tell people all about the time that Single Ladies became a song on the radio. There was that moment in history when Single Ladies was a song on the radio, and it was playing on the radio about every 25 minutes.
Yes.
Like 2 to 3 times an hour, Single Ladies was on the radio. And we were also in the car listening to the radio.
Yes.
Why were we listening to the radio in the car?
Because we weren't listening to podcasts yet.
Who knows? But Single Ladies would come on, and you had seen the video apparently you had seen the video more than once, because you were in the car, sitting in the chair, doing your hands, doing the hand things.
Why are you putting me on blast?
You
about
know the
this?
Hand things. I don't think it's putting you on blast. I think it's explaining to the world how enjoyable you are. He was doing those hand things that she does in the video. I don't even know how to do those hand things. You were doing them. And yeah. And you would, like, you would make everyone stop talking, like Gary Cotty's in the back seat, and you're like, everyone shut up. It's single ladies.
I don't remember this.
Oh, no, it was the true fact. Everyone shut up, turn up the volume, let Alonzo sing along and do hands. So, I think we can safely say that in that moment, in that period of time when Single Ladies was a song on the radio and a hit on the American pop charts, you loved her.
I love that song.
And the lady that made it. Except you can never be her assistant because you do everything wrong and you get fired.
As do we all, apparently. Like, has anybody successfully completed this obstacle course?
I don't think anyone actually wins this game. I think it's a...
I think it's sooner or later, you get fired.
It's a no-win game. Yeah. Now, in real life, I imagine her having an assistant that's
been with
her.
Is there a big boss battle at the end?
I think in real life, I imagine there being an assistant who has been with her from the beginning and is not going anywhere. Like, she's close, there's trust, she knows her friend, right? You know what I mean?
I imagine there's an assistant who is in charge of the other assistants.
Oh, well, that also, too. Like, there's head of staff.
Yeah.
Because there's some staff.
Of course.
There's not just assistants. There's nannies and cooks and drivers and the whole, yeah. You know, everything. Yeah. Listen. I would be very good at vacuuming Beyonce's house. And I think that could be my job. Should film criticism ever... Like, if film criticism goes away and no bakery wants to hire me to come in at 2, 3 a.m. to make things, and if no museum wants me to be a bouncer, I'd be very good at that. Then I would be Beyonce's vacuumer. And she would like it a lot. Like, I'm very good at it.
Because I'm sure you would pitch yourself as like, no, I don't dust. I don't do windows.
I'm obsessed with vacuum.
I'm a vacuumista.
Yes. This is like
I do artisanal vacuuming.
I give classes in vacuuming to other lesser vacuumers.
I'm telling you, you need to get hired to go from grocery store to grocery store explaining how to sack, because I thought maybe you were exaggerating, but you're totally right.
Well, I'm not exaggerating.
I went to the grocery store without you.
You're totally right about that.
I went to the grocery store without you, and the person was doing it all wrong.
They always do it all wrong.
Putting the flour sack next to the, like, moist gallon of milk. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We do have films to discuss.
We do.
And,
we should.
But last week or the week before, we had, like, 7 movies to talk about.
Something like that, yeah.
This week we have 3.
Yeah, well.
So this is going to be a hit it and quit it kind of episode. Short and sweet.
Not a lot opens opposite the Pixar movie, and the one big thing that we did, we didn't see it.
Well, there were two other wide releases besides Toy Story 4.
What, Child's Play and what?
Child's Play, which we missed the press screening.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to go see it this week. I want to catch up.
Mm.
And we'll talk about it next week. Please. Most of the people who listen to this show are not hanging on our every word the day it pops into their RSS feed.
True.
If I know what you're like with podcasts and what I'm like with podcasts...
They'll get to us.
They'll get to it. It's in their queue.
Yes.
Right? And like, 2
Although
weeks...
we love everybody who's... Like, that's... We're your Monday. You know, we appreciate...
If we are your Monday, then...
Being top of the heap.
Thank you, but... You know, if we're just part of your queue, then you'll get to us in a couple weeks from this. And that, you know, you'll have had a chance to see, maybe, what we talk about. I know people who don't listen to us at all until
they see the movie. True.
Until they've seen the movie they want to see. So, anyway, we're going to watch Child's Play this week. And I need to go out and see Anna. Because it's being buried. They released it without press screenings.
Correct.
There was no way to go see it before it opened. And it's shrouded under a cloud of, you know, Luc Besson sexual harassment allegations, which is all taking place in France, and so I don't really know what's going on with that. But I want to see the woman that that plays Anna, because she's a Russian model, and this was supposed to be like her big, you know, break into acting, and you know, now this movie that she made is
canceled.
So, yeah, the movie's canceled, and so it's not going to be in theaters for more than a week. Like, if you want to get this scene in a movie theater, you better go out now.
Well, it sounds insanely similar to La Femme Nikita.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
please, what kind of movies does Luc Besson make? He makes movies about young women with guns battling
people. I know that, but I mean, like, literally down like to the beat beats. For beat.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. We'll find out. So anyway, we didn't see either one of those, but we did see Toy Story 4.
Yes.
Why don't you... Oh, wait. By the way, before we start Toy Story 4, in exactly 5.5 minutes, my alarm is going to go off. My cake timer. At which point, you need to turn off this podcast. I mean, turn off the recording.
Yes.
So that I can go...
He's talking to me, not to you. You don't
listener,
have to turn this off.
In 5 minutes, turn off this podcast so that I can go check my cake. I have a cake in the oven. Story 4, please explain it to me.
Okay.
Because I didn't get it.
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
So the little girl who is now the owner of all the toys that used to be Andy's... she seems to be kind of shoving Woody to the back of the closet.
Well, he's boring.
Yeah, you know, she's Jesse. She often makes the sheriff. She likes all the other ones, but Woody she tends to leave behind. Not long thereafter, goes off for her first day of kindergarten, which she's very nervous about. And Woody, feeling the need to be needed, sneaks into her backpack to sort of like keep an eye on things and you know, try and have things go her way. She's shy. She winds up at a table by herself, which I'm like, what kindergarten teacher lets that happen?
Yeah, not a good one.
Anyway, but they're all supposed to make like pencil cups or whatever. And some jerk like takes her supplies and throws them in the trash.
Why is there was that one little piece of...
Little no-neck monster, as they say in Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. So Woody, like, you know, dumps all the stuff from the trash can out on her desk, including a used spork. And the girl, you know, like, glues some mismatched googly eyes on it, gives it some pipe cleaner arms and some popsicle stick legs, and ta-da, Forky is born.
Yes.
And Forky, in the crazy ontology of these movies, because she loves him and treats him as an object with its own life when the girl's not looking, he is now a toy.
Yes.
But he wants to go back to the trash can because that's where he feels comfortable, because he thinks he's trash.
He wants to die.
He wants to die, basically, yes. And the toys have to keep explaining to him, no, you're a toy now. And, so then the family goes on a trip in an RV, and the kid...
And all the toys get lost and separated, and everyone has to go finding...
Forky, especially.
Forky, they want Woody gets lost with him.
There's an antique store where Woody is reunited with Bo Peep. There is a Chatty Cathy-type doll called a Gabby Gabby, who would appear to have some nefarious intent.
Well, she... When you meet her, you don't think that she has any
You didn't. Problem. I don't know how you weren't immediately creeped out by her whole...
Her entourage?
Her entourage and her whole presentation. Because, like, the toys in these movies, you know, when people aren't around, their faces move. And they have, like, soft human characteristics. And Gabby Gabby is rigidly plastic.
Well, that's because she's an old doll from the 1950s.
Right, but I'm just saying, everything about the way she's presented and the way that she presents herself, I immediately got the, ooh. bad news vibe.
I just assumed they were making her period correct. Like, she's from the 50s or 60s. She's a hard plastic doll with clearly sewn in synthetic hair, which, by the way, the animation on this doll is just impeccable. Like, every hair on her, you're like, oh, that's exactly how that kind of doll looks.
Yeah.
You know, the eyes that...
With the big heavy lids.
Heavy lids that mechanically open and close, like, on their own. Because they're weighted, you know. They've got that kind of doll down.
Yeah. I'm Talkie Tina, and I'm going to kill you.
Right, and that's clearly where they were going with this. But, like, I didn't think that she was a problem until she became a problem. And
I don't think she's a problem to the film. I just knew right away that this was going to be...
That's what I mean. I mean, as a character, I didn't think she was a villain.
I see.
Until she became a... She's a weak tea villain. Like, she's not...
Well, I think she's... They didn't want to do lots of hug and bear all over again.
Of course not.
So, you know, I mean, these movies do not... say what you will about them. One of the things that I think is great about the Toy Story films is they don't repeat themselves. They come up with sort of new and different ways to, like, explore this world.
Yes.
Somebody pointed out that they appreciate that she wasn't the Disney reveal villain, which they've been doing a lot lately, like in the first Wreck-It Ralph and lots of Hug and Bear were like, hi, I'm this new and seemingly benign character, but actually I have a terrible intention, you know?
Right.
You know, so I thought that was interestingly handled. I thought, like...
And her villain qualities come because of her own... sadness.
Yes. Her own needs.
Her own need, yeah.
You know, and I thought, then. Oh, okay, we'll have more on this as soon as someone checks his cake. I also thought it was interesting how they explore the notion of toys out in the world with how Bo Peep has sort of survived on these mean streets. You know, because everything has been sort of usually contextualized within, like, Andy's room or, you know, like the yard or, you know, the playhouse or the school or whatever. So the idea that basically toys are totally running around the planet when we aren't looking at them.
Right.
Was kind of cool. I mean, you know, here's the thing. I've gone on record. Like, I loved Toy Story 3 so much.
I know.
It was a wrenching, moving, beautiful experience. Like, I probably destroyed a vintage handkerchief with the amount that I wept at the end of that film.
I was sitting next to you, and I remember.
So, you know, did we need a Toy Story 4? No. Now that it's here, did I thoroughly enjoy it, and did I even, like, cry a little at this one? Yes.
Where did you cry?
There is a parting at the very end that I thought was...
Yeah.
Kind of hit me.
Okay. That's, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, for a movie that really that we didn't need, you know, the story that didn't need to be continued, I thought this gave me all of the laughs and all of the, you know, emotional stuff and character development, all, everything that I love about these movies. They're still doing it right.
I appreciate the quality of this film.
Yes.
I appreciate the invention. I appreciate the commitment to real life human emotions and difficult, complex emotions.
Yeah.
I do not care about this movie.
Not even Forky?
I just don't care about this movie, and I don't care about Forky at all.
Oh, God. I'm in love with Forky.
Yes, I know. I say this as a you know, an admirer of the first three films.
Mm-hmm.
This one kind of meant nothing to me.
I think that I need to sit with it for a while, and I don't know that its emotional trajectory is as immediately apparent as the other films, but I think it is digging into stuff here, like the way they always do.
I like Bo Peep being her own sort of G-rated Furiosa. That was I was fine with that. I thought Keegan-Michael Key and
Jordan Peele
were hilarious.
Yes.
They made me laugh.
Yeah.
As their, you know, fake, tough Ducky and Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
but there was a sense of finality to the third film.
No question.
And the story had come full circle. And so the beginning of this one doesn't, this is a new cycle of toy identity with with
Yeah.
this new kid.
Yeah, it opens with a flashback, which in my review I said is from the Andy era.
Yeah, but I wasn't feeling it. And given the way it ended, I don't know where they're going to go if they make a five.
Well, see, that's one
Yeah.
of the things that I thought was really interesting,
Not
because
gonna
I feel like
spoil that ending, but
no,
where they're gonna go from here.
I think so many sequels, certainly for kid movies, but even to an extent for adult movies,
Right.
there is this tendency that you can't stray too far from square one
Yeah.
because the next movie has to pick up where you left off and it has to sort of be in a comfortable place and, all these things. So I, in a in, not in the sense of mortality, but I think this shakes things up as much as Avengers Endgame does in terms of when we come back to these characters, they're going to have to do some explanations and some like figuring out who and where and how, in a way that most sequels wouldn't do.
Right. And if there's a part five, obviously I'll go see it because I'm in this deep. I might as well keep moving. I watched all the Saw movies for Christ. Sorry.
That's not a swear. You can say that.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, I will yes, sure. I wanted to feel the things I felt in the first three, and I didn't feel them. So I am you, and this is your Beyonce. There, that's why we
Okay,
go.
fair enough.
That's what we're doing.
Fine.
Yeah.
Way to bring that back around. We also watched the new documentary, Toni Morrison, The Pieces I Am,
Yes.
which is directed by Timothy Greenfield Sanders. He's been doing a lot of cable stuff, like he did The Trans List and The Blacklist
The gay
and The
list.
Gay List.
And boy, does he love that warm, rosy gray background.
Oh, yeah.
He puts every single human being in front of that background, puts the camera dead on them. No one's sitting at an angle. It's you are sitting directly in front of the camera. He's got, he directed the film. Because the
Yeah.
interviewees all are in the same room.
And that's exactly how he used to shoot his photo books.
Yes.
A lot, where he would have like these portraits of people. That was exactly the way he was like dead center,
Oh, I
that
remember
background.
the portrait book
Yeah.
of the porn stars.
Well, that was just one of them. He did several of those.
Well, but I remember that one
Yes.
because that was the one where I had to conduct my third. Not oneth, not tooth, but third phone interview with
Quote unquote.
JT Leroy.
Yes, I remember.
By that time in our relationship.
You had a whole note card.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like she brought up stuff that we had talked about in earlier interviews for different publications. Hey Dave, how you doing? It's been so long since we talked. I was like, oh hey JT, it's good to hear from you again. Like, it was seriously like that third interview. And then later on, I wrote a piece for The Advocate about how I got schnookered by JT Leroy.
You and everybody
I
else.
got tricked
Yes.
by a fake person on the I felt like I was part of literary history.
True. You
You know?
had a front row seat for a literary
I was
hoax.
an unwitting participant in a literary hoax.
Yeah.
So it was very exciting.
Just like Gus Van Sant.
I regret nothing. Like someday I want to meet Laura Albert and go, you got me.
Well played.
Well played, Laura Albert.
I was just thinking, though, we were talking about the way that Greenfield Sanders shoots the talking heads in what is a, for the most part, a talking heads documentary.
Right.
It gives me new appreciation for what Ava DuVernay does in 13th.
Yeah.
Remember how interesting those interviews looked? How she chose different backgrounds for
Yes.
people and,
Yes,
you know.
yes.
Anyway, so this is an American Masters presentation, which you're told at the very beginning, and it certainly, I think, hews to the kind of documentaries that that show does. These sort of appreciations of great American artists, and here's the background, and we're going to focus on like a handful of the more important works. And, you know, we're going to, you know, if they're alive, we're going to talk to them a lot. And then we're going to have like their friends and their colleagues and da da da. And, you know, formally, this is totally what you would expect.
Yes.
It benefits from the fact that Toni Morrison is a fascinating literary figure.
Oh my God. Like, she talks about the books, but mostly she's just talking about her life.
Yeah.
Things that I didn't know because I don't get to go to her house and hear her just talk about her life all the time. Let me tell you what a house it is
Oof.
on a lake. It's beautiful.
Like th three
Three stories
stories that
high
all have like
on a
decks,
lake.
and then this beautiful dock that goes out into the water.
First of all, I need to know where she lives
So you can vacuum her
so that I can
house.
go over. I'll be her vacuumer.
Okay.
And then she'll make me a carrot cake.
Oh.
We already
The
talked.
carrot cake comes up a lot in
We
this
talked
movie.
about this already on one of the other
Linoleum knife
podcasts.
and fork, I
Fork.
believe.
Linoleum Knife and Fork, one of the Patreon shows. I'm on a mission to get that carrot cake recipe. She talks in the documentary no fewer than three times
Yes.
about how good her carrot, pardon me, how good her carrot cake is.
Yes.
She boldly refers to it as the best carrot cake. And her only hint is that she puts in extra carrots. But I need to know, you see.
Yes.
I need to know. I Googled and Googled and Googled and Googled and nothing. So I took it upon myself to email a publicist at Magnolia,
Who's releasing this film?
releasing this film, and I said, "Please, hey, next time you talk to Dr. Morrison, is she a PhD? Is she
I
a
have no
professor?
idea.
I don't know. I know she had a master. She got a master's degree. Is she
I
really a
don't think she has a
PhD?
PhD, unless
Well,
she has an honorary.
to me, she's a doctor.
Sure.
Anyway." Next time you talk to her, how about getting her to slide me that carrot cake recipe?
Did the Nobel Committee demand it?
I would have.
While we have you.
Here in Sweden, please make us a carrot cake. No, so anyway, this movie is such a deep pleasure to watch because I have read how many of her novels? I've read The Bluest Eye. I've read Beloved. I've read Paradise.
Did you read Sula?
Song of Solomon. I've never read Sula.
I read Sula.
Sula, not Sulu.
No,
Sula.
Sula.
And
Jazz,
she's wonderful.
Tar Baby.
No, I've not read Jazz. I've not read Tar Baby.
Okay.
But I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan.
And I love her perspective on being a writer, how to speak to your readers, who your readers are, and how to just focus your life in the direction that you want it to go,
Yeah.
not in the way that anyone else wants you to go, the way you want it to go.
I love the discussion in the movie about the idea of the gaze,
Yes.
GAZE, because this comes up a lot, obviously, with queer film in terms of like, are you making a movie so that straight audiences can be taught something, or are you making a movie that like straight audiences can take or leave, but they're going to have to get on your wavelength because you're making it for other queer people,
Yes.
you know? And you have these interviews with her with like, you know, your Charlie Roses and your Dick Cavett's and your Bill Moyers's, and they all wind up asking like the wrong question. And she just sort of like, you can almost sense the inhalation of like, actually, no. Like she very gently kind of redirects to what she wants to talk about and to them not
Gently but
understanding.
directly.
Oh, yeah.
And
No,
very
no,
much
no.
like, I don't like that question, and I'll
Yeah.
tell you why I don't like that
Right.
question. Because
Gently but firmly.
it orients me in the wrong position.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, she's
And I had no idea that she had been a book editor for years.
I didn't know that either.
At Random House. Yeah. Before, you know, becoming an author.
And, of course, the two most hilarious interviewees in the film, Fran Lebowitz, who has been Toni Morrison's friend for decades now. Now, here's... we already know that Fran Lebowitz and Dolly Parton hang tight.
Oh, that's right. Yes, okay. They do, yes.
So are we now saying that on any given night in New York City, we will see Fran Lebowitz and Dolly Parton and Toni Morrison all having dinner together?
If somewhere. They're all in town, maybe.
And can I just sit at the next table
and eavesdrop?
And eavesdrop on oh, no that kidding. Conversation. Oh, no Good kidding. Good Lord. I'm frankly surprised that Toni Morrison, if she saw the Fran Lebowitz footage, didn't say, "Can you not say stupid things like this about me?" Like, Fran Lebowitz is full on, puts her on blast and says, she loves to get prizes. She loves to get presents. The Nobel Prize. She loved that. Like,
she goes, I throw a birthday party. I tell people, ah, no gift. Toni throws a birthday party. You better bring a present.
So that was great. But I must say, my dear, dear Oprah Winfrey, who is at once goofier than you ever imagined, and also trickier and more sly than you ever imagined.
She is, yeah, she's very sharp, but at the same time, she does present kind of Celine Dion at times.
She...
In the wacky category.
Celine Dion is a good comparison point because Celine Dion totally knows herself and is a wacky person.
Yes.
I think Oprah is in that same camp, right? But what I loved was when Oprah was talking about her book club and how she started off the book club with very gentle, calming sort of books. Like one of the first books that Oprah had in her book club was Ellen Foster.
Remember that book?
Yeah. Kay Gibbons. A beautiful.
You were the only person I knew who knew that book before Oprah.
I had already read that book. A beautiful book about a child who needs a family.
Yeah.
So she's going along and she says this to the camera. She's like, you know, we started the book club with like this nice book and this nice book and this gentle book. And then she goes, and then bam, hit him with Toni Morrison.
Because
the first choice that she made was The Bluest Eye.
Yes.
The Bluest Eye is devastating.
Yes.
If you have never read any Toni Morrison books, begin with The Bluest Eye. It will break you in half. And I'm saying this, I'm a queer white male. And I read it way back, I was in college, I guess. And it just like tore me up. So it's not a story about me. It's a story that I've been invited to read.
Yes.
But it's seriously an important book.
I remember at the time being a little annoyed with the fact that Oprah was pushing Toni Morrison in the book club while also holding the film rights to like all of Toni Morrison's books.
Why was that a problem?
Because she never articulated that. Oh, and okay, like, well, if she'd sort of
copied... You learned it well enough when Beloved came out.
Right. But like, I knew it because I read the trades, you know?
Right.
But like, if you just watched Oprah, you would never connect these two things. And I always thought that was a little...
Well, who else is gonna grab up all those rights and be like, let's
look,
do it?
Look, none of those things are a bad thing. It was
you
great.
You just wanted her to be transparent.
Yes. All right. That's all I'm saying. And then
I don't care about that.
And in the movie, in this documentary about Toni Morrison, they talk about Oprah like tracking her down and getting her phone number from the fire department. You know,
she calls the fire department
to get Toni Morrison's unlisted phone number.
Get her phone number, and Toni Morrison's on the phone going,
"How did they get my?
How'd they get my number?" Who are you? But why are you calling?
But
me?
They talk about, you know, Oprah really wanted to make Beloved into a movie. They show you a clip from Beloved the movie.
Yeah.
And they never mention the fact that it was like a giant flop. Like, well, it was
commercially.
Commercially, yeah. Yes. And I think that's a thing that happened, you know.
But that's not what the movie's about. The movie's about her. And frankly, that movie didn't get its due. I saw that film on opening weekend. Jennifer, my friend, my good college friend and I, we went to see it on opening weekend in Dallas at the United Artists.
At the Cine or eight, the eight? Eight?
At the Eight Plex.
Oh, the movie mall.
The movie mall, yeah. And not a big audience for an opening night, you know, Jonathan Demme film.
Yeah.
Jonathan Demme directed this movie. It is a freaky movie. It's a very difficult, harrowing subject matter. But when Tandy Newton comes crawling out of that swamp all covered in bugs, you're like, I like this film.
I'm seeing something.
I'm watching something I've never seen before. So,
and we also, you know, there is the whole issue about Jonathan Demme having been the director. No shade on the late Mr. Demme. He's a great filmmaker. I think if Oprah Winfrey were making that movie now, she'd get Ava DuVernay to direct it. She'd get,
well, of course,
she'd get a black woman to direct
it. Of course she would. Of course she would. But it was the 90s.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Demme was cool. Unassailably cool.
Hmm.
And was a good choice. And it's a good film. I stand behind that movie.
All right. I need to see it.
It got a lot of bad reviews when it came out. Because it's a like I said, it's a freak out. And it's also really painful.
Hmm.
You know, it is. It's about a woman who, a woman who is a slave who murders her children to save them from
slavery.
From slavery, yeah. That's not a spoiler. That's what the book is about. It's a ghost story. It's a very strange movie. Oprah's really good. Tandy Newton's amazing. So is Kimberly Elise in that film. So, anyway.
I will catch up with it.
Y'all watch the Toni Morrison documentary. It's called The Pieces I Am.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. The words after the colon, I keep getting confused. Okay.
Or The Pieces That I Am. I always forget.
You one don't of the even two. Know. I'm going to call the fire department, see if they know the answer.
Who told them my title?
God, that story. Okay, so anyway.
The Pieces I Am.
The Pieces I Am. All right. Swinging Safari. In 1962, one of those easy listening cats, Burt Kempert, had a hit single, hit album called The Swinging Safari. That's where the title comes from of this movie, by Stephen Elliott, the man who made Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yes.
This film, first of all, a little backstory here. This movie opened in Australia because he is Australian. Mm-hmm. The film is Australian. It's set in Australia. Every A-list Australian person is in this film except Toni Collette and Rachel Griffiths and Anthony LaPaglia and Sam Neill. But like,
well, he's in New Zealand, but whatever.
Okay, sorry, New Zealand. Anyway, this movie opened in Australia in January of 2018.
And is only now getting to our shores.
And is only now getting an American theatrical release. And it's a day and date. So it's in theaters, you know, one theater if you live in a big city. Like here in Los Angeles, it's playing at the AMC Burbank 16. And that's it. You want to see it? On a screen, you got to go to Burbank.
I know it's showing in Dallas because our friend Lisa went and saw it.
Yeah. But it's available to anybody in the United States now who wants to see it.
Streaming.
You can get it right now.
Should right. they?
So, should you? Whether you should or not depends on how well you understand a film where lots of Australian people are yelling at each other at the same time. It is set in the mid-1970s on a suburban cul-de-sac. All three families relatively, comfortably financially stable. And one of the parents are of One Home, Guy Pearce, and Kylie Minogue.
Mm-hmm.
Rhoda Mitchell and Julian McMahon
are
the two parents on the other house.
Mm-hmm.
And then two other people who I'm...
I don't think I've ever heard Rhoda Mitchell not in an American accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then there's two other actors who I did not know.
Ah.
And now I've got them lost in the IMDb list, so I apologize. And Rhoda Mitchell is sort of like the...
Is it Ethan Robinson and Darcy Wilson?
I don't know.
Okay.
Rhoda Mitchell is the, you know, the caftan wearing, you know, one who's very au courant.
Uh-huh.
So she wants to have a swinger party with the other couples on the block. So she tries to organize one. It all goes badly. And then they all start fighting. And that's the movie. Meanwhile, their kids, and there's a million kids in this film. Like, each family has, like, 9 kids or something.
Oh, sorry. Asher Keddie and Jeremy Sims
are
the other couple.
Yeah, I don't know who they are.
Me neither.
This is the first time I've seen them in anything. And the kids are wild and out of control. But not in an over-the-edge kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Or kids kind of way. Just
or Euphoria.
70s unstructured, unsupervised children. You know how that was.
Sure.
When you and I were children in the 1970s.
We didn't have play dates.
You didn't have play dates. You just ran around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you were me and then I hid in my room. But in general, you ran around the neighborhood. So these kids are running around the neighborhood, you know, wreaking havoc. And one of them wants to be a filmmaker. So he's got a little camera and he's making little movies of everybody. And one of the older teenage girls is... What's the right word? Extremely horny. That's the best word for it. And she is presented in a way that I found kind of refreshing, because even though there is a scene in the film where someone shames her for her bold sexuality,
mm-hmm.
she's not bothered by pretty much anything related to it, and she's very open about it during the course of the movie. She more or less wants to do it with every other teenage boy on the block, and she does. All the kids have something going on. The little movie maker kid and the sort of sad, depressed little girl, they're very connected. A beached whale shows up on their local beach. That becomes like this metaphor for, I don't even know. And here's why I don't know. Because everyone is constantly screaming at each other in Australian accents that are not easy.
Did you have subs?
No.
Well, I think if you stream, you can
opt to turn those on. Stream it. But you know how some Australian films are made with the idea of traveling?
Oh, sure.
Like, this is going to play in America, and people are going to want to know what's being said. So we're all going to dial it back a little bit, right?
No, one of my favorite movies of all time is Starstruck, and it took me I don't know how many viewings.
To this day, I cannot watch Starstruck without captions.
To piece together everything that was said in that movie. I do not understand
what's being said in Starstruck without captions. But you know, like a Baz Luhrmann film knows it is going to go everywhere.
Sure.
And so even though he has, I mean, he made a movie called Australia.
Yes.
But you know what? I didn't need subtitles. This one, I swear to God, even Kylie Minogue, who's got a lot of practice not sounding Australian these days, right?
Well, she's doing a specific character.
So do everyone. All the major people in this movie are like, oh, they can do American accents.
Sure.
They are. They are laying it on thick. And I...
Well, because, again, I'm sure they're probably doing, like, a very specific, like, regional...
Yeah.
You know...
Yeah. So, like, if you're listening in Australia, and I know you're laughing at me right now, and I know some of you are in Australia because you talk to us, and some of you are on Patreon in Australia, maybe you've seen this movie, and maybe you can explain some dialogue to me. Because half the time, I was just like, well... It certainly is a colorful film because the period detail is impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
The period detail here is like, it's an onslaught of 70s clothing, hair, fashion. I said clothing.
Yes.
Furniture, cars, you know, the soundtrack, like everything, the extras, everyone looks, this looks like it could have been made in the 70s.
Oh, nice.
With the exception of Guy Pearce's hair, which is kind of weird.
Hmm.
Kylie is clearly wearing a wig, but that, I mean, you knew that. And it's charming and good-hearted. You know, it's clearly this reminiscence, this warm-hearted reminiscence of growing up in the 70s in this very specific place. But it's such a weird, odd little movie that I don't know how well it will travel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What audiences who aren't already obsessed with one of the actors, like if you love Guy Pearce or
right.
Julian
McMahon. Well, they're clearly not giving it a huge U.S. release.
No. I mean, you know, I asked for a screener because
Kylie,
I love Kylie. So here's my favorite part. The closing credits. Kylie sings a cover of Chirpy Chirpy Cheep Cheep, which was,
I swear to you, I do not know this song.
A hugely successful song in 1970 and 1971. A big international hit. An incredibly stupid song. It was a minor hit in the United States. So unless you were had your ears glued to AM radio like
right.
I did
gotcha.
In first grade, you wouldn't have heard it. But she sings a cover of Chirpy Chirpy Cheep Cheep over the, which is a kind of a fun little nod to when she first began singing in Australia.
The locomotion.
In the 1980s. The press nicknamed her the singing budgie. She's a little bird, right? And it stars her sister's ex-husband.
Yeah.
As well. Because Julian McMahon
was married to Danny.
To Danny Minogue for a year. Listen, I'm telling you everything I know about this family right now.
It's weird. Like I remember interviewing, I think it's Stephen Elliott is how he says it.
Stephen Elliott.
When Adventures of Priscilla came out. And like that movie was so big and such a hit globally. I think people were expecting him to have like a more Baz Luhrmann-ish career.
Right.
But his films, I think, have mainly been in Australia.
They're very, very much sort of fixated on Australian stuff.
Like Welcome to Whoop Whoop, very Australian.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like Eye of the Beholder. Like he works, you know, he's racked up a filmography, but like I would say most Americans have probably not seen a thing that he's done since Adventures of Priscilla. It's just a weird thing. I just remember that movie at that time, it was like, it was that perfect moment between the new queer cinema and American gay movies getting more sitcom-y and trying to cross over more, you know?
Yes, right.
And, you know, it obviously, like, it spawned a Broadway musical, or, you know, a musical that wound up on Broadway. I'm sure it started in Australia and then went to the West End or whatever. But
right. Anyway,
it's just his career path has not gone where I think a lot of people expected it might have, but I'm glad he's still out there doing his thing.
So, got a DVD pick for everybody?
Well, yeah, but first I thought we might mention our Patreon page.
Sure, we have a Patreon page.
It's
Patreon.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
If you go there, you will see a video that explains it to you. There will also be categories of subscription, because that's basically what it is. You subscribe at different levels of money, and you get different things. You get other podcasts. You get hangouts on the internet with us. You get objects, items, if you want them. You get personalized podcasts if you want them, all kinds of things. Go there, see it.
Shirts and pins and yes. mugs and whatnot.
I've been getting a handful of emails from people who have been talking, listened to a few episodes ago where I was like, oh, I forgot someone and I feel terrible about it. And then I've gotten about three or four others from folks who are like, hey, what about me? You forgot me too. So
still, thank you. For the most part, thank you are doing a very good job of
yes,
keeping
yes,
up
yes,
with
yes.
people.
You don't need to praise me on the
look,
show.
It's not for you.
And you don't need to make everyone like feel comfortable out there. I do get to most of the people most of the time, and as a human being, sometimes I make the mistakes.
Okay,
but I've got everybody's.
This is a pop and
messages.
Pop operation.
It
we
is
do
a
our
pop
best.
And pop operation. A boppity bop. Blah blah blah.
Blah, blah. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. My DVD pick this week, there's a new Blu-ray from the Criterion Collection of Swing Time, starring Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire, directed by George Stevens. It is, there are those who would pick it as their favorite of the Astaire Rogers movies. I have it right up near the top. I'm probably still more either Gay Divorcee or Top Hat, but it is a dynamite movie. They're extraordinary in it. And, you know, yeah, you should watch all of their films, but specifically this one. And, you know, the Criterion release has a lot of cool extras and essays and interviews and all the things that you want from them. So check it out.
About a month ago, I put Dorothy Arzner in TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to catch up on her films. Well-known director of the early movies.
She was like the only woman directing movies in the 1930s Hollywood era.
Okay.
For Hollywood studios.
She made a film in 1937 that we watched last night called The Last of Mrs. Cheney, Cheyney. Stars Joan Crawford. It's a remake of a 1929 film of the same
with Norma Shearer.
Name with Norma Shearer. Now, she is not credited as the director. The director is credited as Richard Boleslavsky, who died mid-production.
Yes.
It was then handed over to George Fitzmaurice, who somehow also didn't finish the project. And then finally, Dorothy Arzner came in and fixed it and made it all right.
Yeah, and you know, it's for what you, it sounds like, ooh, troubled production, but you'd never know it from the results.
Right. This is a, you know, a delightful comedy of manners and crime. Joan Crawford is a jewel thief working with a crew of butlers and maids who want to fleece the aristocrats in England. And so they set about to do this. And it is lots of fun.
William Powell's in it.
William Powell's in it.
Robert Montgomery, the wizard. Frank, why am I blanking on his name?
Why am I blanking on his name? The man who played the wizard in The Wizard of Oz, Frank Morgan.
Frank Morgan, thank you.
So, it's that kind of comedy where people say funny things in a cutting way to each other, and it takes you a beat to realize, oh, they've just insulted someone.
Yes.
You know.
It all sounds very polite.
It all sounds very polite.
These people invented shade, basically.
Right. So it's wonderful. You should watch it. That's my recommendation.
Yeah, good stuff.
Got some letters.
You do. We do.
And my my second cake alarm is going to go off here in just a minute.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Dr. Steve. What kind of letter is this? My neighbor, M.A. Ross, and I are having a secret contest to see who can have the most letters read on Linoleum Knife. So, what's the score? Hell if I know.
You think we're keeping track of that?
Y'all both talk to us quite a bit, and we love it, and thank you. But we do not keep score.
No idea.
David says, hello, David Alonso. As a person with a fragile mental state, I was looking for some recommendations. Just the briefest overview. I'm on short-term disability for the second time in a year due to depression and panic attacks. My job is a major trigger of this. I work in hospice. So I'm looking for movies that are comforting and that will give me faith in the world. Some of the ones I've used include Won't You Be My Neighbor, Paddington 2, and Faces Places. Any thoughts?
So you want cozy, basically.
Cozy, well, comforting.
Yeah. Well, we did a whole episode of cozy movies you should go back and listen to, because I think that's a good crossover.
When did we do a cozy movie episode?
When the hosts of the All Things Cozy podcast sat at our table and did a podcast with us. Do you remember that?
How long ago was that?
In the last year or so.
I remember that happening.
Yes.
I remember them doing it with us.
Yeah.
But it seems like forever ago.
No, no. No more than 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of.
Yes.
Plans are afoot.
Oh.
For special guests to be here.
Oh, yes.
To talk about Spider-Man.
Yes.
Far From Home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping it all works out.
Yes.
I'm working with their schedules right now.
Okay.
But they've both agreed.
Great.
Yes. So if we're lucky, it'll be marvelous. Some of you know what I mean by that.
Comfy movies. Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Oh, yeah. I love Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
That's a comforting movie. That's a movie that I can just sit and watch whenever.
Babette's Feast.
Oh, God, yes. Totally.
That's the best.
Yes. I know we talked about, you know, Beloved being directed by a white guy, but The Color Purple.
There's quite a bit of trauma in that film, though.
There is, but once you get to the other side of it, I think,
right,
you know, there's a lot of
right
redemption and,
no, I understand,
and, you know, catharsis.
Now
Voyager.
Okay. Sure, I guess.
Well, I mean, like, the mother is a piece of work, but there's so many other people in the movie who are so kind and supportive, you know.
You know, I... Movies about goodness are hard to come by.
True. It's not very dramatic.
This is not very dramatic, yeah. You know, when I'm feeling in need of comfort, I will tend to go to a comedy that is from the past.
Ooh, Midnight.
Something like Midnight, or something like Desk Set.
Sure.
Where I feel cozy watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I know where it's going. I know it's going to end happily. The people, I love the characters. You know what I mean? It's stuff like that. So,
On Golden Pond is a comforting movie.
Quite often for me, though, a film about, you know, a film that gives me faith in the world is often a film where the characters go through something pretty tough.
Sure.
To get to that place. And so... You know, I love The Trip to Bountiful, but it's quite often a sad movie.
Yeah. I mean, this is a seasonal choice, obviously, but the musical Scrooge does that for me.
Sure. That's, if you're watching in December, yeah. I feel like I'm not being any help here. Oh, and by the way, if anyone wonders why I laughed at the expression fragile mental state, it's because it's now this sort of thing that is
this, the email is referring to something that Dave said.
An earlier email I got from someone said they worried about my fragile mental state, I thought that was lovely and touching and also very funny. And so now it's my thing.
But seriously, do go back and find our episode with the All Things Cozy folks, because we really did spend most of the episode talking about movies that we found comforting.
We have been messaged again by, we went through this whole thing about how to pronounce her name, and now I have forgotten what we learned. N-E-L-E, is it Nela? Nela?
I've also forgotten.
I'm sorry. I apologize for forgetting. But here's the letter. For my literary and cultural studies class, I have to watch 3 films, one American, one British, and one post-colonial. From the following watch list, could you recommend me any, and also tell me which ones I should perhaps skip because they're overrated? I have excluded Citizen Kane, Birth of a Nation, and Pride and Prejudice because I've already seen them. Okay. The Kid, Charlie Chaplin.
Sure.
Mother India, which we have on, we have a VHS of Mother India that has been sitting in the closet for years, and we have not gotten around to watching it.
Indeed.
So, if it were me, I would watch Mother India because I want to watch it. The Big Boss by Lu Wei, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
Don't know it.
The Harder They Come, which is wonderful.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
It's an amazing movie.
And if you...
And it'll knock you down.
And you should make sure to watch like the more recent edits, like Redux and whatnot.
The extended
that
stuff,
include
yes.
the yeah. French plantation stuff, especially
Absolutely.
If this is going to be about colonialism.
Right. My Beautiful Laundrette.
Ooh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover.
Yeah. I have to say, My Beautiful Laundrette, I went back and rewatched it when I was doing 101 Must See Movies for Gay Men. And I found it a little dated in terms of the surfaceness of its politics. But if that's what you're looking to discuss, boy, are they right there for you to talk about.
Nothing, that movie's got nothing on Sammy and Rosie Get Laid.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's even
was
more.
The follow-up. And boy, I, you know what? I'm this close to being a full communist. And and I remember watching that movie and thinking, could we back up just a little bit? Like, you're going to make me annoyed at being a full-on leftist here, okay?
Like, you're making it difficult for me to be an anti-Thatcherite because you're pushing it so hard.
Yeah. Dead Man?
Haven't seen it.
Jim Jarmusch. Fire.
Oh, Deepa Mehta. Yeah. Good one.
Flame, which I have not seen.
Don't know that one.
Atanar Juat, The Fast Runner, which I have also not seen.
I've heard good things, never seen it.
Adam McGoyan's Ararat.
I've heard
not great
about that one.
Whale Rider, which is
it's
very moving.
It's nice. It is nice.
And A Fond Kiss from Ken Loach.
Oh, I don't know that one.
That's not one. That's not a Ken Loach film that I have seen.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to pick. I'm going to pick the ones I want to watch. I want to watch Mother India.
Okay.
I want to watch the Ken Loach.
Mm-hmm. The next to last one.
What's the American one going to be?
Oh, those are yours.
Dead Man.
Not Apocalypse Now?
Dead Man is... It's because I've more recently written about Dead Man
sure,
for the rap
yeah.
on my Jim Jarmusch list. That's what's in my head.
Gotcha.
Dead Man. Yeah.
I'm sure you can't go wrong with either one.
Correct. Okay, we're finished here. We're through professionally.
Fine. Thank you all for listening. Check
out our cake out of the oven. It's so good, and it's clean all the way through.
It looks pretty, and it's not caving in.
It's not caving in. It didn't cave, and it's going to be covered in a strawberry glaze very soon.
Well, all right.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney on their two shows, Cancel Too Soon and Critically Acclaimed. The latter can be found on the Schmoes
right.
Know Network.
Yes.
And, of course, check out the Schmoes Know and all of their crazy stuff. Dennis Enun with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. And you can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Subscribe to us for free.
You can find me at D. Leland White.
You certainly can. And I'm
across the board.
And I'm at A. Duraldi, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E on Twitter. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We will read it on the show. You can also leave positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and TheLounge.com, Spotify, Google Play, you know, pretty much all the major podcatchers.
Right.
Speaking of Deck the Hallmark, they are doing a live show in Los Angeles on July 30th. I will be somehow involved in it. You should come.
Are you going to wear a Santa suit or a hat? Are you going to do a little dance? What's happening?
I'm sure as we get closer, they'll have a more firm idea of what my participation is going to be, but they asked me to be there and I'm going to be there. So July 30th at Dynasty Typewriter, you can go to deckthehallmark.com and find out about tickets. Also to their shows in Raleigh and Brooklyn. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Won't you? And yeah, we're done. Until next time, thanks for listening, and until we meet again,
goodbye.